You're listening to BBJ Cast, the weekly podcast of the Baltimore Business Journal covering the top business news in the greater Baltimore region. Welcome to episode 25. I'm BBJ web editor Rob Terry, and in this episode, we give you a scouting report on a possible marketing partnership between two Baltimore sports icons. We lay out the expansion plans of a well-known local nonprofit. We talk cap and trade energy systems and small business innovation research grants. And we give you some insights on how to prepare for a knock on the door from the state tax man. But first, breaking business news found only in the latest BBJ, on newsstands and online today. For 25 years now, business has been our middle name. Under Armour is aligning itself with Baltimore Oriole legend Cal Ripken Jr. and could be close to signing the Baseball Hall of Famer to a lucrative endorsement deal. An agreement has not been announced, but sports marketers say indications point to a pact between the two Baltimore icons. An advertisement for Ripken's upcoming summer youth baseball camps says attendees will be dressed head-to-toe, quote-unquote, in Under Armour gear, and Ripken recently wore an Under Armour polo shirt featuring the Ripken Baseball logo, that's his holding company, during a March 6 television appearance. That kind of co-marketing would not go on without a deal in place, or at least in the works, sports business experts say. And officials with Under Armour, the fast-growing performance apparel company known for its array of moisture-wicking gear as well as shoes, could not be reached for comment by the BBJ. And Ripken Baseball spokesman John Maroon declined to comment on whether Ripken is in talks with Under Armour. But if a deal was reached, it would pair arguably the biggest brands in Baltimore, its most well-known and homegrown athlete, and one of its fast-growing corporate darlings. An Obama administration proposal to reduce nationwide carbon emissions could complicate efforts in Maryland to set the state's own emissions cap and to lower electricity costs. The Maryland Senate already has passed a plan to cut emissions 25% below 2006 levels by year 2020, and the House of Delegates could soon follow. While some were confident the Obama proposal wouldn't halt debate in Maryland, lawmakers will be eyeing the measure. That's because if a federal program were made stricter than state or regional plans, it would supersede them. Lawmakers also have been focused on stemming rises in electricity rates, possibly by returning the state's energy market from a free market to a regulated one. But energy industry officials say the Obama plan, known as a cap-and-trade system, would raise costs of power generation, and that would mean higher prices for consumers and businesses despite re-regulation or any other statewide effort to lower prices. Incidentally, this is one of a package of stories assessing the potential impacts of President Obama's budget proposal on businesses in Greater Baltimore. Do check it out. Meanwhile, biotechnology companies in Maryland say there is $229 million in federal money that belongs in their pockets, and they are urging federal lawmakers to help them get it. With $10.4 billion in additional funding, the National Institutes of Health was one of the biggest winners in the $787 billion federal stimulus package passed last month. But that pile of cash does not include an earmark for small business research grants, which means the money would likely go to academic research institutions. Leaders of about a dozen Maryland biotech firms have convinced Senator Benjamin Cardin to ask NIH leaders to set aside some money for small life sciences companies in the Small Business Innovation Research Program. If given the money, these companies say they will use it to create jobs and new products that could rev up the dismal economy. Finally, Goodwill Industries of the Chesapeake plans to open four new retail stores and more than quadruple its local warehouse space in the next year, an expansion that could create nearly 50 new jobs. Goodwill executives are scouting Southeast Baltimore for two new stores and are looking in Columbia for a third. All this growth, Goodwill executives say, is fueled by a sales boost the nonprofit has seen nationally and at its 23 Central Maryland locations as more cash-strapped consumers go on the hunt in search of discounts. This is just some of the breaking business news in this week's BBJ. Call 410-576-1161 today for a subscription. You'll get a free book of lists if you do so. Also, be sure to sign up for our daily email update at our website, www.baltimorebusinessjournal.com. While you're there, check out the other ways we're bringing you local business news online. Besides these podcasts, which are available on iTunes, we're also on Twitter. We have a new social networking site. And we've started rolling out web video packages. And now for this week's centerpiece. As if the recession and credit crunch weren't enough, there is another increasing economic threat to Maryland small business owners, state tax audits. Faced with a $1.1 billion shortfall in tax revenue, State Comptroller Peter Franchot has beefed up the technology and manpower of his office to seek out Maryland business owners and taxpayers shirking the state's 6% sales tax. What that means for employers is that tax season 2009 could be filled with some expensive, burdensome, and surprising queries from Maryland's tax man. Most vulnerable are the state's small businesses, including bars, restaurants, and convenience stores. And local tax experts say the audits could uncover anywhere from $100,000 to $4.5 million in unpaid taxes from a single business. Mike Dillon, president of Dillon Tax Consulting in Annapolis, is one of those experts, and he joins us now. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Comptroller Franchot, Mike, is making no secret of his increased tax vigilance. He hired 22 auditors and revenue examiners last year. His office has put in place a $90 million tax collection system to pinpoint businesses and individuals not paying their share. Does this new vigilance, Mike, surprise you at all?
No, not at all. I think if we compare and contrast last year's assembly to in the special session shortly before that in 07 to this year's assembly, we're seeing that there's not a whole lot in the way of tax law changes that would affect most small business owners. We're not seeing, like last year, the increase in sales tax on services. We're not seeing changes to the base. We're not seeing rate increases like we saw last year from 5 to 6%. But we are seeing the huge deficit. And obviously, spending can only be cut so much. So where to come up with the rest of the money, the state's going to turn to the comptroller, and they're going to increase revenue through auditing more audits of existing taxpayers and also identifying more taxpayers that aren't currently compliant, those out-of-state businesses that may be sending individuals into the state to generate revenue and aren't currently registered.
Mike, what is a business taking on when it finds itself having to defend itself against an audit?
Well, there's a number of things that have to be considered. I mean, there's the cost of having to potentially hire experts to bring in the amount of house to defend either the audit process or the appeal once an assessment is issued, and that's more typically the case that a company tries to handle it on their own. Mm-hmm. And once they see the assessment, they realize, oh my God, I don't think I'm I'm equipped to be able to handle this on my own. I need to find an expert. And those costs can, depending upon the size of the assessment and the type of defense that the taxpayer wants to wage, can be substantial. Bringing in attorneys and statisticians to attack the sampling methods of the taxing authority. And then you've also got just the opportunity costs of having to pull your own finance folks and operational and accounting folks off of their normal day-to-day operations, having to track down invoices, contracts, exemption certificates. And this could be monthly long processes that drag on for 3 to 6 months until the audit is satisfactorily resolved or is resolved without satisfaction. Those are just some of the costs. And then you've also got, especially for small business owners, I often find that I end up playing a bit of the role of the psychologist, because we're talking about the livelihood of some of these taxpayers, and particularly with sole proprietors, bars, restaurant owners, when they're slapped with a six, even potentially seven-figure assessment, and they see that, their livelihood is potentially threatened, because the only way out is to, short of actually being able to pay this, to just basically liquidate the assets of the business, including any licenses that they have, liquor licenses and so forth for bars and restaurants. So basically, they're facing the potential of losing everything that they've built up over the past several years. Mm. You end up playing more than just a professional advisor. You end up having to really counsel them through the process from a psychological standpoint as well.
We're talking with Mike Dillon. He is president of Dillon Tax Consulting in Annapolis. He's an expert in the state tax code, and we're and he counsels clients on how to prepare for a state tax audit. Mike, in your experience, how prepared are small businesses for the tax man should he or she come around to kick their financial tires?
Well, typically not very prepared, and I would say that same thing rings true even for larger businesses, even those with very sophisticated accounting platforms. I think one thing to bear in mind is that the audit that's going to take place currently really began 3 or 4 years ago, and so those processes, those procedures, perhaps even over which the current financial teams had no control because they simply weren't at the company at the time, those processes and procedures and the documentation that's being gathered and retained and how it looks from the auditor's standpoint are going to, you know, largely impact the outcome of an audit today. So those are, you know, some of the things that companies really need to be proactively doing are actively reviewing these types of documentation, ensuring that they're maintaining that documentation, reviewing what their contracts say about their tax position, where they should be collecting tax, reviewing their multi-state activities, reviewing invoices, making sure that they're maintaining exemption certificates. These are the things that, you know, most companies simply don't have the capacity in-house to diagnose and to review. And it's only typically when an audit occurs and a bad outcome occurs that the company realizes, wow, this is the kind of the tip of the iceberg. We really need to get someone in here that understands these issues and can review where else we may have similar concerns, not only in other states, but also reviewing the same state where the audit just occurred to ensure that the same thing doesn't happen again. Because most certainly if the result of an audit is a substantial assessment, the state's going to be back for a second round.
Well, along with developing that diagnostic capacity in-house, Mike, let's wrap this up with your advice on what small businesses need to be doing, not only to keep their books in line, but to also stay up to speed on the tax code and any significant changes. What can they be doing?
Well, I think, you know, taking a look at the state comptroller's website, they're getting better at providing taxpayers with information regarding tax law changes, and a lot of Department of Revenues don't really like to disclose a whole lot of their policy changes, not just the code and regs, but the policy, the interpretations of those code and regs, because that leaves them flexible to kind of change their position on things. And so a lot of states don't really disclose a lot of that information on their websites, but you know, the state is getting better at doing that. I think also keeping in touch with their local chambers of commerce and with the Maryland Chamber of Commerce, which actually stays abreast of all these tax law and other business law changes that that may impact small businesses, probably the best way. And then also just not simply placing blind faith in the fact that since they have accountants, that their accountants are really keeping their finger on the pulse of all these things that are pertinent to their own business. They really have to take proactive ownership over all these things and really, you know, seek out individuals that are experts in some of these nuances.
Very good. Proactive ownership, some good advice from Mike Dillon, president of Dillon Tax Consulting in Annapolis. Mike, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate you being on the podcast.
Thanks so much, Rob.
All right, that wraps up episode 25 of BBJ Cast. My thanks again to Mike Dillon of Dillon Tax Consulting in Annapolis for his time and insights. Thanks also to BBJ Production Director Mike Gillespie for his engineering assistance on the podcast. I'm Rob Terry, the web editor here at the Baltimore Business Journal. Thanks for listening, and we hope you tune in again next week.